Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Just to give the listeners a bit of your epic martial arts background, what are some of the different styles and competitions you've done, and how has that led you to where you are today in terms of coaching and helping people, bringing smile to people's faces, basically?
Yeah. Well, I started with Japanese jiu-jitsu, but it was nothing for me because I had to do all kind of push-ups because I was a bit too wild. Because, you know, it was like touching when you were sparring, you had to touch and it had to be soft. It was not for me. And so I stopped. And then when I was 14, I walked into a gym, in a Muay Thai gym. I saw a beautiful, beautiful lady, the sister of the trainer, kicking a guy in the liver. He went double. He was like, I don't know, an 80 kilo guy. And she was like this little beautiful lady. And she just kicked him down. And I was like, okay. So I fell in love. I bought secondhand gloves and I never stopped. And until I was 18, there was not a week that I didn't train. Not a single week. And so after like half a year, I started fighting, kickboxing and Muay Thai. And, you know, pretty soon I became Belgian champion in the youth and then Benelux from Belgium, Holland, and Luxembourg. Then went up the ranks and, started amassing a bunch of Belgian titles, the European title. And then I had a world championship and then they stole me. I was very angry because I played with this guy. But in the moment, it was back in the day that jurist was still a bit, you know, it was a bit fishy. And so I asked all of them, like, did you give me a loose? He said, no, none of them said that they gave me a loose. It was very weird. And then finally I asked like the head of the federation. He says like, yeah, you're just too young. I'm like, what? But then, you know, and so I went up the ranks and I went fought in Thailand, in Japan, everywhere. But then at a certain moment, you know, I didn't have a lot of fights coming in. It was a bit of a issue with the management. And so I started doing some jiu-jitsu and some MMA. Why not? I was training 3 to 6 hours a day and I was not having any fights. So it was really frustrating, you know. And at that time, I was working at the university as an assistant professor and researching emotional or psychological well-being. And there was like 4 or 5 guys at the jiu-jitsu, you know, nerdy jiu-jitsu guys, you know. And so I joined them and then I started doing MMA. And then I had my first fight in Germany. And then, I won that actually on jiu-jitsu, which was weird. And then I went to Japan and knocked a legend out. And then what followed was that I went a few times to the States because there was where it was at. But then I found a job in upstate New York in the gym where John Jones is actually originally from. It was Team Bomb Squad. So I was going to be the head coach. And then I was going to do the Ultimate Fighter. And a year before, I trained with Ronda Rousey. It was the season where she was the captain. So, you know, it was all very nice, beautifully aligned. But then I had a medical check in Belgium. And then I found out that I ruptured both of my retinas. Mm. It's crazy. And I saw it was like this weird expression on the professor's on the doctor's face, and I'm like, you can publish with this, can't you? So he could publish because he had never heard of a double retinal detachment, mostly
right.
One side. Yeah. And so what followed was like 7 surgeries and me having to hang up my gloves. But to be honest, I think my eyes saved my brain. Yeah, I took too much punishment, you know. And so my career got a bit of a downturn after a heavy KO, and I started fighting, training a week afterwards immediately. You know, it was like back in the day, it was not so much known. And also I didn't really listen to my trainer, who was more worried, you know. And so I learned a very, very, very painful lesson. It's something that I gave up the love of my life. I gave up so my academic career. I gave everything up for this, for my passion, for my love for fighting. And I learned that, you know, if you do not listen to your body, if you do not respect the fact that to peak you have to replenish your body, well, then you will break down your body. Now, for me, it was like this. My conditioning was absolutely crazy. Like, you know a bit about heart rate variability?
Yeah, I had a guest actually who specializes in heart rate variability. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. So when I breathe in, then beats faster, and when I breathe out, then beats slower. That was crazy. My conditioning was wild.
Mm.
But at the same time, my testosterone levels were pretty low. Well, and now actually my testosterone is double as when I was a professional fighter 10 years ago. It's crazy. But of course, I took so many hits. Was back in the day, you know, like the ring was fun. Because actually in training, you went so deep and so hard, and then sparring. It was not sparring, it was fighting, you know. It was the tradition, you know, in the Dutch style fighting. And so, and then I had to look, what do I want to do now? And I started working with some world champions around performance psychology. But, you know, something was missing. And then I started working with a few executives, you know, and entrepreneurs that had burnout. And in that moment, something really interesting opened up. And namely, like very often when you have burnout, one of the biggest stressors, one of the biggest factors is having a lack of or a lack of a satisfying intimate relationship. As for sure with women, that was very much the case with men. You know, very often what you saw is that it was unfulfilling because, you know, very often they have focused so much on their business that, you know, the quality of their relationships were bad. And so I could see that. And it was interesting because I've studied this my entire life because, to be honest, I was not the biggest specialist in having good relationships. And so what do? I'm a nerd, so I start reading about sexuality, about intimacy, about relationship therapy for years. Not that I want to work in it. I just want to understand it. But in that moment, you know, my business start to flower, the performance, pleasure, the ideas start to grow. And so I learned, because I saw so many people excel beyond what most people think is possible, but then when you really start to look in their eyes, when you really start to talk with them, they were unhappy. They felt lonely, even though everyone was there trying to support them, but it's really powerful. And so I start to realize, okay, what happens when this happens, when you become obsessed, when you forget everything around you? Well, in that moment, you're not living based on what you value so much. You have forgotten that. very often has become a rule. I need to succeed. I have to do this. And the problem is that very often it comes from a pain. You see, it's most of the very, very successful people, they have very hard upbringing or event in their life, because there's a hole in their self-esteem, in the pain. And what you try to do, it, you try to cover that with your ego. And what is that actually? It's you try to cover the fact of that pain with achievements. But it's like a black hole, because every time you put an achievement on top, it absorbs it and becomes bigger. So it's interesting. You see, the law of diminishing returns comes back. The more you seem to succeed, the less satisfying it often becomes, because they forget the more that we need two phases. We need stress and challenge to thrive, and then you have adrenaline and cortisol and dopamine, really cool. And then some endorphins if you're lucky. You feel really good, and then you drive forward, and then you caught the mammoths, you know, or you won the war. And then what always happened in the past for our caveman ancestors, aha, a fire. We start talking stories about our heroism. We start to sing, dance, make sweet, sweet love, and eat. So that serotonin and oxytocin, you know, those two hormones that really replenish your energy source and that give you the chance to refuel your dopamine systems. And those both things it is. And so you can enjoy it. And so I start working with people to do both of that. But that does not mean that you have to work less. No, there's a different way in which you can do it.
Yeah, harmony and balance, you know, like the sacrifice of one thing to that's compensated by another. It's interesting you talk about the relationship aspect, because I've just learned myself, having a very grounded family relationship has benefited me so much in terms of you know, and I see it with a lot of successful people. They have a healthy relationship, and like you, by the sound of it, it took me a lot of tricky relationships to get there. But in recent years, I've really realized the value, the healthy balance in terms of having the grounding of a healthy intimate relationship. Just on the fighting thing, like I never stepped into the ring. I trained and stuff. For you, how different was it actually? Because I really admire anybody who has gone in the ring and is standing in front of that very real threat. In your case, that this very one of a kind injury. You know, these are the real threats when you actually. I mean, it can happen in training too, right? But the yeah. kind of visceral nature of being in the ring. What was your preparation like, or were you so prepared and training so hard that step, like you say, the sparring was fighting? Was it just quite a normal step to go in the ring, or was it a completely different experience?
It's completely different, but I love it. I miss it every day. Is the feeling that you get the moment just when you hear your name, you hear the, you feel the paces in your belly, you hear the people scream your name, oh, say "Brood!" I love that the most, you know, that you're on foreign territory, and then you get it, oh, man, it's the best feeling in the world. And even when you lose, like it was really destructive the first few times, the few times that I lost, really painful. But at the same time, at the end, it was like it's part of it, because if you do not have if there's the chance to lose is very small, it's meaningless. And so you can see that in the rest of the life too, like stress and challenge is what it's about. If you don't have that, you extract all meaning out of life. People don't realize it enough. You know, we very often, for example, when you have a fight with your spouse, when you learn to fight but stay present, not become reactive, just feel that anger and feel the pain and feel the underlying needs and stay connected while you both want something else. But well, in that moment, something new can emerge. There's a kind of real intimacy. Because most people do this. I do something for you, you do something for me, and why you're here. You know, and before you know it, you're like, a mixture of wine and beer, disgusting mixture that nobody wants to drink, you know. And of course, then passion falls away because you practically, you know, making love to yourself. So, and who wants to do that? Well, me not, you know. So then, three things. Oh, you go separate, and then you both ruptured because you're so intertwined, or you just stay here, living a life next to each other because you're here, you're intertwined, but you feel you're living against each other because you lost track of who you actually really are. And the person you fell for changed completely. And then the third thing is learning to stand on your two feet. And this is powerful. That's why relationships are the fast track to personal growth, because if you can stay connected in the presence and hold on to your truth and to your values and stay connected with the person that is pressuring you to compromise, well, then you can take everything. Then facing like a board of directors or a world champion is nothing. But yeah, like when it comes to that fighting, you know, it's something that I still miss, that the drive and the forward driving nature, the ease of that for me is something I miss. I'm still disciplined. I still work hard, but it's not. It takes me more discipline. It takes me discipline. It takes some willpower. But before fighting, it was need nothing. I loved it, visualizing, studying, because I didn't have back then. It was not so well paid, you know. So didn't get like the. So I did all the training myself with my trainer. Just we did it together, you know. It was very amateuristic, but not, you know, professional fight level. And so, yeah, that was came so natural to me. You know, the first times I went to train, I got beat up. It was like literally 45 kilos. I was like midget, you know. And then they hit me. And there were 80 kilos, so they don't need to hit me hard. But, you know, I love it. I just loved it.
I really love this parallel between, and it's not one that I've heard the way you describe it in terms of this parallel between relationships in the ring and out of the ring, and what you do in the ring, how that serves your interactions outside. It just makes me think of a story because just quickly, I was in a band for many years, and band relationships are a thing of their own, right? They can have a lot of create when you get a you've seen it through history. You get a bunch of creatives together, rock and roll. It can be kind of intense, and often the relationships crumble more often than not. I was in a band with two other guys for some time, and we had an intense experience. And one of them is very much like a brother to me. But after this experience, We had a lot of call it baggage from this experience of being in this band, and we didn't, and the band split up, and we didn't see each other for some time. And he was studying Wing Chun, and I was studying ninjutsu, and we met after some time, and we had all these issues that we hadn't really addressed with the band splitting up suddenly and all that, but we'd both been training, and rather than like sit there and talk about it and go over it and like get angry or whatever about this stuff, we said to each other, let's go to the park and spa. And because we had a very trusting relationship as kind of brothers, because it was a safe way to do it. And we went at it for an hour, you know, and he was like, at first I was struggling to deal with him. And then in the middle, I kind of started to deal with him better. And it was kind of, there wasn't a winner or loser or anything. It was just, as you would know, ebbs and flows and so on. But my point is it was very healing. It was a very healing experience for us to, rather than sit there and intellectualize everything, to just roll around in the park. And by the end of it, it felt like we had just let go of some of that baggage. And this is what I mean with what you're saying. Like, you know, I think sometimes you could sit in relationship therapy and intellectualize. It's important too, I guess, to have an objective look at things. But there is something to be said for this connection, this presence, this engagement that you're talking about. That was my experience. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So I'm actually working on a project that's called The Silent Warrior, which will be retreats where you train Muay Thai or boxing, I think, because it's more achievable on more people, you know. Without talking, it's like a combination of a silent retreat, as Vipassana, and fighting. It's really powerful. For sure, for men, it's really powerful. Why? You know, I believe that we live in a society that is so word-focused, so cerebral-focused, and forgets the way that men used to bond. Like in the tribes, how do you bond? You go through hell together. You suffer together.
Mm.
But what people don't realize that when you have high stress levels, your oxytocin, so your hugging hormone, goes up too. And people are like, how is that possible? Well, it's logical. Because if you are facing a tiger, you better do it with them than when you're alone. So that's actually, it has a clear function in the stress response. And so that's something that we miss, this phase where we go from a boy to become a man. And what was key to that is a connected man. Now you become a man, but for sure in the West, it's very individualized. As a man, the lone wolf. Well, I think it's one problem. You know what a lone wolf is? A lone wolf is a very dangerous animal because it's not made to be alone. A lone wolf are the animals that will kill just to kill. They are ostracized. They are dangerous. But a pack of wolves, that's something completely different. And so we are more like wolves than a lone tiger, although there are some tigers out there. But, you know, yeah. And so to me, the fighting is a really beautiful metaphor. I always say, like, relationships are a full contact sport. Real intimacy is.
Mm.
But the problem is what I see around is that real intimacy is very, very scarce. Whether is it in whatever relationship, even in business relationships, you know. These days, people are always talking about psychological safety in organizations. But they frame it in such a way that it would mean that everybody has to be careful. But that's a complete misunderstanding of what makes a high-performance team, a team that thrives. No, you have different levels. The first level is you want to feel you belong. But if you really want to feel you belong, you should not hold your mouth when you are thinking things that are opposed to other people. That's one of the problems that you see in society, big for sure in the States, but also more and more in Europe and Australia too, I don't know, you know, is that you have like different opinions and all of a sudden you dehumanize each other. You block the connection because they have a different thought. They offend me. That's so horrible. So what I believe is that to really get to real psychological safety, to get a high performance team, to get to real, deeply fulfilling relationships, which are needed for business or in life, for everything actually, that is that you start to cultivate internal psychological safety. Now, what is that? So it's a concept that I created that comes down to first, become less reactive. So learning to hold your stress, make room for the intensity in your body, in your mind, and in your heart. That's the first step. Acknowledge, make room. But then the second thing is, then reconnect with the fact that we are all biased human beings. We all have a limited vision of the world. And so we need communication and discussion and disagreements to create a more wholesome, a more true model of the world. But thus, it gives you humility about your own things, but also doesn't start to take other people's positions so personally. And then from there, you can stay connected with the other person, even if they are insulting you. But it takes a lot of things. It's easy to say, but it's difficult to do. And a beautiful example of a man that I think is the beautiful, the prime example that I have is one of my only real, real heroes. It's Daryl Davis. You know Daryl Davis?
I don't actually. Is he a fighter?
He
No.
No, he's a African American jazz singer, and he converted single-handedly more than 200 Ku Klux Klan members and neo-Nazis by
Ah.
just having deep conversations with them,
Oh, wow.
long, and he built relationships with them. But you see it in his interviews. The guys, sometimes what they say is really offensive, but he doesn't take it personal, and he starts asking questions. He starts asking questions and modeling that is different. And so, I think, the current climate where everybody has to be an agent for each other, and that everybody has to watch their words, it's such a dangerous climate. No, it's the opposite of what we want. If you want true inclusion, if you want true, which in my eyes is inclusion is intimacy on a grand scale, is the ability to stay connected with the fact that we're all humans with mistakes, with biases, with things. That's a basic premise. And if you can stay connected with that, even when somebody is really offensive, then you can get so much further. But it takes some serious training and some building up too. I think not even me sitting in front of a Ku Klux Klan member, I don't know if I could stay calm in the face of such terrible words. But still, I think that that would be the solution to create more inclusion, to create a society and a business and a team where everybody feels that they are accepted, even though they have wildly diverging ideas.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, I know where that comes from. Okay.
Yeah, no, then I think there needs to be a willingness to step towards the discomfort of saying what needs to be said. And I agree with you in the current climate, like less fear about really, this political correctness, just really getting to the truth of things in particularly in relationships as well. Like I've just priding oneself on being as honest as possible, because often in a relationship there can be an argument about, say, the fridge. It's not about the fridge, right? There's some underlying resentment that hasn't been put on the table, and the reason it hasn't been put on the table is exactly what you're saying. There's a fear of like saying what needs to be said, but actually, when we say these things, when we say, the unspoken stuff. I've personally only found that people have often embraced that because other people have maybe been too scared to voice it. I've been scared. I've been in a lot of corporate meetings in the past where people just remain silent because they just fear their position. They fear ruffling feathers. But as you say, that's where the real bonding, happens in any relationship, I think, when you just step into that, have the courage to step into that discomfort. Yeah, so valuable, I think.
Yeah, that's why I believe that conflict is can be such a good thing, and also why allowing conflict in a relationship can be one of the main tools of how can you create long-term passion and mutual attraction. Because if you're here, like I said before, you have no attraction because you lost yourself, and there is no space to enrich. What is desire? Well, desire is space. So if you have some fights every once in a while, that's why I think the loss. some more Latin cultures. They're fighting a lot.
Oh,
they
yeah.
have much, a lot of sex. Why? Because they are realized, they keep connected to the fact they are two individuals. They choose to stay connected, even though it's very hard. Now, I don't want to fight every day, don't get me wrong. You know, but and it's also not the message. The message is like, why is conflicts can be that such an aphrodisiac? Well, because it makes clear that you're a different individual with their own strengths, with their own intricacies, with their own little dark spots. And so when you stay connected with that, you know, you can then both grow with each other by doing that sparring. They're like, a conflict shouldn't be a fight. A conflict should become sparring. Where we both know, okay, we have like this image, this is our worldview, this is our view of the relationship, this is our view of our business, you know, this is our view of what we want to do. Like, but I know, when I'm really honest, and when I really think about it, I know it's different from yours. Maybe it's slightly different, but let's do that. And if you have the same image, then it would be really, really smart to involve somebody that comes from a completely different background, from a completely different thing, you know, different ancestry, from a different part of the world, different race, different ways of thinking, different education. Like when you put that together, then you have a much bigger chance to create much more possibilities. But to do that, you have to be able to don't take disagreement personal.
Yeah. Conflicts can be really uncomfortable for a lot of people. I know I've struggled with, you know, I've learned the value of healthy conflict, but it's taken me a long time. I used to be very trying to avoid conflict, you know. What do you recommend? I mean, you've said it already about the presence and the being, you know, trying not to be reactive, stay engaged. This, I really love this idea of this personal stress protection system. Yeah. Is this what you'd recommend to maybe somebody who is really uncomfortable in conflict?
Well, yeah, and don't go ride a killer wave or a tsunami where you can't even swim, you know, like. If you're uncomfortable with disagreements, then if do something very small. If somebody asks you like the salt, how do you call it?
The salt shaker.
The salt shaker. Say no.
Reject the salt shaker.
You know, but little things. You know, it's like you start to build up. So you think about it. You make like this. It's like the bullseye. In the middle of the bullseye is an action that you would never think would be possible. You know, for example, calling out your boss, saying that he's talking absolutely, that he's absolutely mismanaging the team. So the first thing is, for example, if your lady is sleeping, is wanting to hug, but you're too warm, or the other way around. Your lady wants to be alone and you want to connect, to just go through. Like, there are very things. You have several levels. Sometimes, for some people, it just means that you dare to look somebody in the eyes. You know? So for everybody, it's different. The difficulties. And it doesn't have a logical order. It has to be logical for you. So you make these things 10, 20, 30 steps and slowly you take that protocol where you indeed make room for those sensations, those feelings. You acknowledge them and you let them go. And then you focus. Okay, we have here this connection. This is a human being, just like me. We're both guys. We both have limits. You don't. You can go through it like that, but it can go much faster because you know brain. Just know those things. This is a human, just like me.
Yeah, take small steps, small bite-sized pieces. Don't take on the tidal wave as
you or said. You do. So there's two things. This is what they call a progressive desensitization. It's a classical technique from psychology. But the other one is called flooding. And depending on your personality, that's more my thing. Small steps is not good for me. I get bored.
Same, actually.
That's why I was fired. And so then you can choose to do the flooding. It's like if you're afraid of spiders, they put you in a bed packed with spiders.
Mm.
Now, for most people, this would be, would be really traumatic. But again, like, it's not for everybody. It's only a few types of people. They're like it's the people that go to war. It's the people that step into the ring that need that to feel alive. But otherwise, you get really traumatized. It's not smart for everybody. You know, so you have to be really careful if you want to choose something, such a thing. And also, you didn't develop the skills yet. So you have to be smart. You know, you don't, like, even when you want to flood, you're not going to, if you're afraid of boxing, you're not going to start fighting Mike Tyson, you know, in your first fight. That's just stupid. But I really believe that if you practice yourself everywhere, expressing your truth, there will be disagreements. If somebody delivered you food that was bad, then just talk with them, but in a normal way, non-reactive, non-attacking, just stating the facts and what you would like them to do. You know, it's an art form. You know, like theoretically, everybody can do. In practice.
Yeah. And I loved in martial arts how like being open could actually have the reverse effect of defueling or calming things down. You know, when someone's very like strong and grounded in their own presence. There was an incident here in the supermarket where a guy was kind of testing the customers, you know, trying to get like a reaction from the first person and then from the person behind the cash. And then I was next in line. And as soon as he came to me to try and get like a rise out of me, I just took a step towards him in a very comfortable way. I just stepped towards, and I was basically saying, I'm comfortable what you're doing is not, and that actually shocked him because it wasn't the normal response. People would retreat, but me just taking a step forward in like a grounded and kind of open way was enough to send him off. It's amazing how like an openness and a humility, like you say, can actually keep a conflict, regardless of how intense the difference. It can keep it like level or hell or kind of.
Yeah. Well, it's like when we fight, it's often the same fights. It's a system. And we play the same roles. And there's only one person in the dynamic, in the system of a family or a business or a band that needs to change. Very often is you have like pressure between two people and then you get like an over correction by two people of three people that get more connection, and the other one will feel left out and attacks the other one. And so you get that this negative loop that gets further and further. Well, how to break? Well, the ones that are over-involved, they have to take a step back, difficult. And then the one that's normally left out, they have to get more connection. You know, that's the baseline. But then, of course, like in practice, something is difficult. You see it very often, you know, that's, like, for example, Fukushima is a place where they didn't listen to somebody that really was warning them for the dangers. Literally. Tried a lot, but never. Like, when the space shuttle went down, exactly the same. There were warnings, there were things that was just not listened to. And then they also stop hard. So even though they don't listen, like, and don't drive forward, yeah, then shit will happen. You know, but it's quite easy and logical to not do it, because then you have humility. You think, oh, perhaps I was wrong because my boss didn't like it, you know. And so you want a team. You want people that work with you to dare to speak their truth and to push forward if they really believe it, until they see the proof. And if they see the proof, then it's okay, and then be flexible enough to accept the counter argument, you know? So you want people that are a little bit disagreeable, but not too much, because otherwise you're fighting each other all the time. So that's also not very perfect. So, yeah. You know, it's, and what I like that you just said before, you were talking about harmony and balance. Well, I don't want to believe so much in work-life balance, because it is not a balance. We work much more, generally. Doesn't need to be, but very often. However, it has to be a harmony. You have to feel, the family has to feel like a harmony. The why? Because in that moment, it's about quality, not quantity. So it can be a balance, but that means that certain things are heavier. You might say 10 hours of work, but like 2 hours of pure, undivided attention, without phones, without TV, without anything, where you do something fun together. You know, what would you prefer? You would prefer a family where every night everybody drops in the couch or eating chips and there's no another word, zero interaction? Or you have perhaps two nights a week where you do something beautiful together. You go to some, you go to a sports event, you go to something cultural, you make something together. Like, what would be much more fulfilling? Mm. It's for everyone different, but I believe that for most, when they're really honest, you know, zoning out behind Netflix day in, day out is really a waste of time. And don't get me wrong, I don't judge, because, you know, I had times that I had that. You know, it happens that you get in this rut of avoidance. Avoiding.
My son and I, he's 10, you know, we actually play this laughing game where we try and make each other laugh. And it's so much more, it's so much more quality time than just watching. I mean, we watch the stuff, but like, we always make sure we have this make each other laugh time, because it's what you're saying. It's very, very present, very connected. You're trying to get the other person to laugh. And, we do this most nights actually. And it's so valuable, like you say, to have this, this block of time that's such quality time. And it's not the quantity, it really is. You know, if I do that with him for 20 minutes, that's very quality time. It's a tradition on the show to have guests offer the listeners some kind of challenge. It doesn't have to be anything big or grandiose, but given your experience and your expertise, is there a challenge you might like to suggest?
The willpower challenge. So willpower is one of the only higher level psychological traits that are very close related with a specific brain area. Medial central, how is it? It's not that important.
Cortex or the I
don't know. The, No, wait, hold on. I have it. but, you know, like, so this is a thing that you can develop. It's trainable. It's the anterior mid-cingulate cortex. It's something, you know, I just heard a beautiful podcast about it. But the thing is what you need to do is you need to find little things that are not nice. I just heard this really beautifully coined by Andrew Huberman, you know, and he put it very beautifully. You have to look for and go through little sucks. You have to go against resistance. And the more you do that, for example, you wake up half an hour earlier than you normally do. Then the next day you do the same thing, but then you take a cold shower for 10 minutes. Then next day you do those two things, and then you start to do 50 push-ups. Then the next day you add half an hour of meditation. Like that, every day you do something more that is a little bit, you know, it takes some effort to start doing it and to do it and to finish it. It needs to involve some struggle. Because willpower is a muscle that can be trained. And yes, willpower needs some energy, you know, but it's not as limited as people always thought. They used to think that it was because of glucose, that it's a lack of glucose, but it's like, but all the research has shown that it's actually like, you know, that the belief, that's the belief that a lack of glucose will make you lose willpower. No, I believe, and I know it very well. I had periods that I was like the most disciplined ever, and I had periods that I was horrible. Up and down. For sure, when I was recovering from the fighting, like and trying to find myself, it was hard, very hard. You know, but it feels really good once you start to enjoy the suck. Like when you're training, you're pushing, you're doing the kicks, and you're almost out of breath, and you can't, you know, your heart is beating in your head, you know, and you say, okay, 10 more, 5 more, and then your liver starts to do this because you're so pushing it, and then you go further. And then it might be that you just fall double because it hurts so much, you know, but when you can do that, like not only in sports, but also in all the other little things, the more you use your willpower, the stronger it will get. It will become a second nature. People don't realize this. So I want to challenge your audience to pick for the next 10. And if you're really brave for the next 30 days, every planet, add a thing to your habits that is difficult. And you can go slower. You can say, okay, I start with waking up an hour, half an hour early. Actually, it didn't work, you know. But after a few days, you struggle, and you go through it. Now, that struggle is not a sign of weakness. That struggle is actually what is needed for your brain to make new connections. People don't realize that. You need to challenge yourself enough. You need to struggle in order to get to your best state. So people always talk about flow. I just want to flow. I don't want to grind. Well, then you have a problem, because if you want to reach flow, in most cases, for sure when it comes to occupational flow, you need to grind. Your brain needs to be triggered enough to awaken that high performance state. If you don't struggle, the chance that you will get flow is very, very low. You're not challenging yourself enough. Or you're challenging yourself too much that you give it. So that's it. You know, like you need stress, you need that challenge, and then you need the recuperation, like we said in the beginning.
Yeah, the concept of willpower as a muscle is pretty cool. That it can be exercised like a muscle. Yeah, that's awesome. Where can people find you and this retreat you mentioned? Is that still something you're building toward? But where can people find your work?
I'm still building towards. My website is getting a complete revamp. My new website will be called To Your Top, because Perform With Pleasure gets flagged by Facebook because of the pleasure. Those Americans. It's also, I have to be honest, the name also is a bit of a wink, you know. Like I talk about that too quite often, but that's a different thing. but you can also contact me through Instagram, Nico_Verezen. My website at the moment is nicoverezen.org. My name. Cool. But it will change, but I will redirect it to your top somewhere between this and 2 weeks.
It's been really awesome to chat to you. I really appreciate the insights, and I love this connection between, you know, people make a lot of judgments about fighting and stuff, but this connection between fighting and conflict and relationships and presence, it's a really nice connection there for everyone. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for the invitation and to, you know, show me to your audience.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot maybe your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance.
UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.